Hello, Rachel.
Hi, Ryan.
Please, Rachel, choose to live. Please, please choose to live.
I'm at peace.
Please don't let your path end. I love you, but I may have to kill you with this sword if you cross my mission. My path, my duty as a Romulan warrior nun, Rachel.
This episode on Yum Yum Pod.
Hold on.
Star Trek Discovery's fourth season. Mm-mm. This is in a recap capacity.
Yes, we...
Spoilers abound. The episode that we are up to discussing...
You know, Rachel loved it. She wants to get straight in. She wants to get straight in.
Choose to Live. It currently has an IMDb average user score rating of 5.3. The description that is offered up is Burnham and Tilly hunt for the killer of a Starfleet officer as Stamets and the science team race against the clock to prevent the anomaly from killing anyone else.
They don't race, really. They sit and meditate and don't do jack shit.
And that's not part of the science team.
I mean, he forms a science team with the Navarre Science Institute.
He visits the Institute.
Yeah, that's, and he forms a science team with them. Okay. To be real, we are Ryan Rachel. We're Yum Yum because of that amazing line of dialogue. Dare I say, not even amazing. Spectacular line of dialogue. Yum Yum. Quoted by Nan D. Those are two separate names, not one name.
Is it quoted by them if it originated with them?
Well, they may have been quoting somebody else. We don't know her culture too well. We had a chance and they didn't want to explore it any further. But she said the line, yum yum, and it really made an impact on our lives. We never recovered from it. Like the burn, it left a major ripple through the universe and specifically as to viewers like us. We won't forget it, and nor can you, because we're bringing it up. A lady licked her lips sexily, flicked her hair back, and said yum yum as a serious reply to something. And what a moment that was. We had to name the podcast after it. We're looking at things through the yum yum prism. We're looking at things through the yum yum perspective. We're looking at Star Trek Discovery, rewatching it, reviewing it, revisiting it. Spoilers are abound, as you say, Rachel. Choose to Live. What was the yum yum moment for you? The moment that stood out as the bizarre moment or the crazy moment or the out of place, out of touch, cuckoo bananas, yum yum. I have mine, but I'm curious to hear what you got as the yum yum moment from Choose to Live, the episode with the Romulan warrior nuns.
There's not one that I find very striking. I've forgotten most of this episode, and we finished watching it less than 20 minutes ago. So I'm going to go with Book's mind meld when he watches Leto turn around.
That's the yum yum moment. That's more of an emotional, poignant moment. People cried when they watched it, Rachel.
It was just,
they cried butterfly tears.
It was too strained. It was too strained.
Oh, talking about strained, mine was Tilly dropping the sword. Oh boy, I'm a comedy character, and I'm slippery hands because I just moisturized them this morning. Boom, boom, boom. I can't hold a sword. I'm goofy. That was my yum yum moment. I rolled my eyes because...
Oh, you know what? I take it back.
You gotta take it back.
There is a Tilly moment that did stand out for me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm working as fast as I can, but I really did a number on this. That line, that delivery, yum yum qualities about it.
We have a few minutes while Lieutenant Tilly repairs the systems.
Oh yeah, at least.
I mean, I'm hurrying, but I really did a number on this thing, so...
You are saying it is already slipping from your brain, much like how I was with the previous two episodes. I'm not like that, honestly, at the moment with this. I remember this, but more vividly than the last two, just having viewed it. But this is one also in which, when we first viewed it, it stuck with me because of the reintroduction or reuse of these warrior nuns that were given to us in Picard, and they were given to us last season.
Trying hard to make him a thing.
I do not like them. I do not like Burnham's mother. So, of course, I remember this one because it's things I really don't like. And, of course, the things that you don't like are things that you do remember. They burn into your brain. I find them corny. I find them embarrassing. I find them lame, the warrior nuns. It's that Stephen Moffat era Doctor Who type thing in which we're trying to make something cool, and it's just so forced. I always think of Peter Capaldi riding a tank, playing an electric guitar while wearing sunglasses as a great visual identifier of what this is. We're trying to be cool. It's a loser's, it's a nerd's interpretation of what cool is, rather than actually achieving it. An example of something that is cool to me in Star Trek is when Picard has come back from being teamed up with the aliens that speak in nothing but metaphors and cultural similes and all of that, and he walks on the bridge being able to speak to them in their own language and confidently and disarms the situation. That's cool. This whole, we got Romulan warrior nuns with swords? No. Darmok is far more cool to me than this. So I do remember this. Out of all of the ones in the season, it's the one that has just stuck. And revisiting it today, I didn't like it, but I found
it... Did you like it the first time?
No, but I didn't like it today. But in the comparison to the other two we have watched, I think I liked it the most.
Ooh, maybe a yum yum for this episode.
Mm-hmm. And it's a very pitiful reason why I liked it the most, which is not only did I understand what was going on, but structurally, it failed in a way that I find the most spectacular.
Oh, mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I kind of adore it in that analytical sense of looking at it being like, wow, you really didn't know how to build that bridge, did you guys?
The autopsy that, is interesting.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that bridge fell down it killed so many people when that bridge fell. Wow, it's quite amazing how much you fucked it. What about you? What was your overall journey with this one?
I forgot how much is crammed into this episode. Because there's lots of little things. And none of it is of substance. And it adds up to nothing. I remember this episode feeling light on the first watch, and this one it felt very heavy. Because I was like, oh, they're spinning all of these plates and I care about none of them. But I think on the first watch I was just like letting it wash on by. But on the rewatch, knowing where all of these different parts go, I'm like, oh, that's grabbing my attention because it links to this, or I'm paying attention to this because I know for certain that it goes nowhere. And this thing, well, it kind of matters, and oh my god,
you know,
I get it. You have themes.
Does it?
You need
family.
You do not
faith.
You do not need to directly
sense of purpose.
Make thematic statement
connection
every fucking episode.
Mac and cheese.
You don't have to. You don't have to, but you will. But you will, and I will suffer. I will suffer.
Please, Rachel. Choose to live.
I didn't want more blood to be spilled. That can stop right now. Choose to live by leaving immediately. Come after me, your lives are forfeit.
When I'm looking at this, all I see is an episode that is made by obligation. We have to tend to all of these plots, and we don't have enough time. So let's, in this episode, spend the entire runtime putting a little bit of water on each of these plants, like in Saru's...
I like seeing Saru's garden.
Like in Saru's garden.
I like his quarters.
But you're not...
I enjoyed that.
You're not nourishing any of them here. All you are doing is setting up pieces. And I know where you put these pieces in the end, and it's not at all that fascinating. It's not at all that interesting. In fact, a lot of them fall flat because of where they go. Gray's storyline, for instance, I just look at it and I see something that should have been delved into deeper.
Yeah.
And more, so much more could be done here, but they're not interested in that. They're not interested in it. And this is an episode where everything is done with a begrudging sigh. That's how it came across to me. Yeah, we'll do this Romulan warrior nun story. Yeah, we'll bring Michael's mother back. Yeah, I guess we'll have a scene where Paul introduces the name of the series-long threat here. I guess we'll have to go to Navarre and do science shit, I guess. It comes across as they're pulling their hair out as they're doing it. There's this gritted teeth, almost antagonistic edge to how they are distributing the time and energy to each one of these multiple storylines. Because this isn't an A, B, or an A, B, C story. This is an A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I, J, K, L, M, N, O, P, Q, R, S, T, U, V, W, X, Y, Z. I never misfiled anything. Not once. Not one time.
Not ever.
Not ever. It's very impressive. Yes, very impressive. How are you when it comes to this? Are you similar to me? Do you feel differently? How was it for you when it came to the overall tone and energy of this and its plots?
That's a fucking mess. It's a fucking mess. It's meant to be melancholic, I think, because there is connection between the experiences of the characters throughout each of the plots. Like, all of them are going through a phase of uncertainty with things that are beyond their control. So Gray is trying to incorporate and kind of gets lost a little bit on the way because they don't have a guide. You know, something that I do not understand why it wasn't done on Trill.
Or why the guy wasn't physically there.
Yeah, and how he can feel Gray's soul through a hollow.
Hey. They can feel things through hollows, but they can't have a ability to stink for cats to smell.
No smell, but sensing a soul, yes.
I mean, what's a soul? Honestly, at this point, I mean, sure, why can't a hologram detect a soul? Beep, beep, beep is like a, you know, metal detector. Beep, 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 beep. If he waved his hand over it and it started, like his fingertip, like E.T. started flashing and a beeping sound happened, at this point, I would believe that. And if they said to me, flat out, if Star Trek Discovery said to me, looked me right in the eye and said, our holographic technology can detect souls? It would be in the realm of possibility. Is that ludicrous? If they came in season 5 and said, oh yeah, well, one of Hugh ate some bad burritos this morning and lost his soul, and now we're trying to find it. Beep, 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 there it is. It's in the toilet. That could be a plot. I mean, the technology is so far ahead in the future, yet it's also still stuck in where we were in the first season of Discovery, where it was also a prequel to TOS. Like, the hologram detecting a soul, like the Zed guy, you could go, oh, it's his alien magic. I don't know how his alien groove can communicate through holograms, but I guess it just can. I mean, Troy could sense people's emotions through the view screen, so I guess he could do similar, right?
Yeah, sure.
It's like how
that wasn't even my main point.
Right, but sorry, I went off on a tangent because I also was thinking about the hologram detecting a soul.
It's fucking ridiculous. So, you know, Gray and Adira are going through that point of transition. I think I just want to go through all of them, as many as I can.
Before you leap off on this, what you are going to do is go through a checklist, right? That's what you have. You have a list of what the plots were, and you are wanting to go through them one by one so we can say that we've talked about them and discussed them and even looked at them and acknowledge that these were things we consumed.
No.
And that is...
That's not what I want to do.
What do you want to do? I thought you were like, oh, let's go through what plots there were quickly as possible, because what I was going to say is... That's what the episode is.
Hell
it's
yeah,
a giant checklist in which it's like, okay, Adira and Paul, Adira and Gray and Hugh were in the episode. What would they be up to? This. Paul is here. What would he be up to? This. Book would be here. What would he be up to? This. It is a list.
I guess that's part of what I'm doing, but that, like, the purpose that you were describing was not the intent that I had. So this episode is heavy with themes, and I was going to go through the checklist in a thematic fashion and describing how all of the characters in each of their plots relate to that central idea of kind of developing connections through a leap of faith.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's at the center of all of these things.
Yes, I agree.
Either they're lacking them, they're developing them.
They're strong in them.
Strong in them or reconnecting to them, right? So we have Gray and Adira with the physical body, Adira losing their connection to Gray in the way that they had it. Because their relationship will be fundamentally different.
And the worry that even if Gray will transfer and even live and survive, and they
but
have to
being
have faith.
Connected in a distinct way. And Hugh has that same experience in a different way because they're getting to connect with Gray in a way that they haven't before because they haven't had a corporeal body to do so.
And also Hugh is connecting to Adira in not only just that of a fatherly type bond, but also as the ship's doctor and counselor position. And so there's that dynamic there. There's that new role at play, and how do you do that? What's the right level? What's the right amount? What's the right touch? There.
Gray is connecting with the Trill again.
And being corporeal and alive and having a sense of actual autonomy and consciousness is also like that montage at the end. And I say montage, like that series of images of the actor crying and touching their face and really delivering on the, oh my God, I'm alive. Again, if I'm going to give some praise to the show, that was a better way of communicating the message than if it was a bunch of emotional lines splurting out of their mouth to communicate what was going on.
Very appropriate way to use the visual medium.
It was a show, don't tell. Everything I need to know was shown to me via the actor expressing those emotions on their face, and it was done suitably. Did I roll my eyes a little? Yeah. But, like, you're right. It's about, like, tying into themes and all that. That was just through the visual medium telling you about how it's tying into that theme. And if anything, we should appreciate that out of all of them, that was the one that tied to the theme in the most naturalistic and subtle way. Yet it's also the most underdeveloped story in the entire episode. Like, every time we kept cutting back to it, I almost was kept forgetting it happened. Like, I was like, that's happening. Like, I didn't completely forget, but every time they did go to Gray's body limply laying on the bed, I was always two steps behind where I think the show wanted me to be in my attachment to it.
I just kept on being like, oh, time for this.
Mm.
They're slotting this in now.
Okay. We're back to this one on the checklist.
Yay.
Okay, yeah.
Yay. Let's do Tilly next.
Hers is probably probably the most filled out in this. I would say it has a beginning, middle, and an end. I found it the most compelling as well. Maybe because there's a part of me that's still, like, there's that 2017 version of Ryan Slowinski that liked Tilly. And there's that still within me where I see Tilly struggling and I see Tilly wanting to be and reaching out to somebody like Saru, who they have developed throughout all four seasons a strong connection and friendship with. And that little essence of my care for the character of Tilly is just lit up a little bit for me to look at the storyline more favorably than any of the others here. It's still ham-fisted. It's still wrought with inappropriate tonal shifts and, again, slapping you in the face with what the motifs and themes are. But I was drawn to it. And maybe because also I have a bit of melancholy, to tie back into saying this episode has melancholy, with where they do go with Tilly. I have a sadness of how they just open that trap door and eject her next episode. Even though she's not been a favorite character of mine, as we've all heard in previous reviews, I just... yeah, I was drawn to it the most. It was the one where I go, oh, if this was another Star Trek show, if this was Strange New Worlds, this would have been unabashedly a Tilly episode. But it is fighting for time with all of the other plots. How did you go with it?
Meh. Tilly is telling me things. Just verbal diarrhea, that's her character. And she's continuing to do that. No shocker there.
But she's trying to get out of her comfort zone.
Yeah.
And get in it? Comfort zones. Remember that whole speech she gave?
Yeah. That was over food.
Mm-hmm. Not cake, which is eternal.
No, but apparently she doesn't like cheese.
Well, yeah. Or mac and cheese, at least. But,
well, no, I think Saru has a weird line about her not liking lactose.
Has that been established? I can't be bothered to listen to our previous episodes to find that answer out. Note that I didn't say watch the episodes. Listen to our episodes, because I know in the past we would have probably made a note of such things. But you were saying you weren't as drawn into this. This was a little bit too just wishy-washy verbal diarrhea
yeah,
for you.
And I was even less invested because I know that it goes nowhere. So I was like, okay.
Is it?
She figures out, like, she brings up the cadets again in this one. And I'm like, oh, you're trying really hard to make this work. And I don't think it does. Just don't think it does. But, you know, she's trying to connect with herself again because she's feeling lost.
Having a sense of purpose.
Yeah. Her drive isn't there. She had a clear goal in mind, but now she's closer to that goal than she's ever been. Mm. And yet it doesn't feel like it's something that she wants anymore.
Is it that this isn't good on the rewatch? Not necessarily because it doesn't go anywhere, but rather it abruptly gets to where they needed it to go. Because the next episode we'll get into, obviously, next week, but clearly they knew as writers that they weren't going to be able to continue this character for the whole season, so they have an idea of what they need to do, and they have 4 episodes to do it. So suddenly, Tilly has this identity crisis and suddenly leaves Discovery. But when I'm looking at this, it is very obvious that they're pushing her towards that. So it's not that they don't go anywhere with this. It is that they are shoving a square peg into a round hole to get it in. You know what I mean by that?
I understand. I'm not as thick as the writers think I am.
But do you get that yourself, or are you still kind of disconnected with it or don't care enough and just look at it as a simple, they just don't go anywhere with it?
Oh, it's like, yeah, it could have been something. That's my relationship with so much of Discovery. It's like that idea could have been something.
Mm-hmm.
And that idea is explored to fruition in other texts, in other forms. But we don't get it with Tilly.
What is it you hope to gain from novelty?
To be honest, I'm not sure yet. I do keep thinking about those cadets at the academy and just how certain they are that they are exactly where they're supposed to be, you know? And I used to have that.
What's on the checklist? Let's just can we just lump Paul and Book together?
I was going to go Stamets first. Let's do him briefly. So he's reconnecting
he's trying to connect to Book.
Yeah, no, that's not where I was going with it. Because that does come in later. Because, you know, that's linking up with the previous episode with him trying to, you know,
but that is a drive.
Manage a drop of empathy or something like that.
Well, that's a driving force of him doing everything he does. He's
he's wanting to keep that promise.
Yeah, he's not even trying to solve the DMA because of his usual ego, but rather solve the DMA in a way to relieve the burden and guilt of Book. And as we know from the previous one, he sees how Book is at the moment as a reflection of how he has been. So there is this weird kind of guilt loop between the two of them. And
yeah, it ends up being sort of selfish in a way.
Well, that's what I was going to ask. Do you think how Paul is being in this episode is selfish? And do you think the show thinks that?
I don't know if the show thinks that, but I definitely do. Because he doesn't want to. It doesn't come across to me that he wants to connect with Book where he's at to help Book.
That's a great way to put it.
It comes across to me, especially with what he said last episode in mind about how, like, I don't want to look at you because it reminds me of how helpless I was. It's seeing Book lose his family makes him concerned that he could lose his.
I also see it as inherently self-centeredly driven. I do not think the show thinks that. I think it comes across to them as him being noble and selfless. And also perhaps Anthony Rapp is so consumed in playing the egotistical side of Paul Stamets, and he has that theater energy where maybe he as an actor is pushing the what is supposed to be the selfless qualities of Stamets too aggressively, too forthright. I will relate it like this to get, you know, to bring it into our lives. Whenever we get into a relationship squabble or argument or whatever, there's that moment, right, sometimes where one of the partners involved will try to push for the resolution to happen because they just want it to be over with. Not only because they're sick of being in it, but because they do want things to be good again. When we're having that.
Can we be done with this?
Yeah. Not only is it, can we be done with this? It's not that. It's not me saying to you, hey, Rachel, can we be done with this? It's me overstepping with my kindness and so-called selflessness because I want you to see that I'm over it or I'm willing to move on. And that means that you can join me in being able to move on. And that's what it comes across as with Stamets, of he is overdoing it. But again, I cannot remember if the show delves into this, and I don't think it does. I think we're supposed to see this as just noble old Paul Stamets, who, you know, is inherently an egotistical character. That is a part of his core descriptor that you would use is ego. And so you could make the case too is they're not betraying his character, because if he was what we would consider to be genuinely selfless, would that be a betrayal of the character that we know?
You know, becoming a parent changes people.
You left me stunned there because I didn't realize that one of the writers just entered the room here. Hey, could you bring Rachel back, please? I didn't realize I was going to be speaking to one of the head writers of Star Trek Discovery here, and I didn't know that they were going to fucking own my ass in front of everybody.
Yeah, you know, we really look to the example of Barney Stinson and How I Met Your Mother.
I can tell you when I lost interest in the episode, though.
Before.
It involves Paul.
It does involve Paul. Okay.
Yeah. What I lost it was, well, when I knew that we were in trouble, structurally speaking, is we've been built up. We're going to team up with these Romulan warrior nuns. We're going to team up with them. I'm going to do this. And then the other storyline is Gray and Hugh and Adira doing this. Okay, cool. And then, Book's also having a lot of stuff going on. Okay, I guess we're going to deal with that too. And then Michael walks into the room where Paul is with the spore drive and all that, and he's going through all of the fucking lore and exposition and build up for the DMA, and he drops the DMA and he's giving all this stuff for the DMA, and it's like laying out all this stuff that they're going to do. And I went, wait, we're also doing this too? And then, of course we have
and
to.
And this.
And it was, that's right, we've got to push the season-long mystery along too. Instead of actually teaming up with warrior nuns and doing the mission and maybe learning something about each other along the way and having Tilly involved because Saru did this. And when we cut to that meeting where Paul's giving all the technobabble and his theories and what he wants and how he's going to solve it and explaining the DMA and giving it a name, I lost interest. I lost interest because I went, that's right. We have to, as you said, keep spinning the plates. And isn't it amazing that we keep spinning so many plates?
Ooh, isn't it pretty? More means good.
But that's all I wanted to touch on with that. Because it was it was a red flag to me. That was the moment where the writers came into the room and said, Ryan, this isn't going to be one of those easy streamlined episodes. No. This is going to be a plot stew episode. This is going to be an episode in which the time spent is fighting with all of the plots happening. And you have to work really hard for that to work. And I don't think they made it work here.
No. See, I wanted to start with Stamets's connection to the broader scientific community, because he's trying to workshop this while being an egotistical idiot.
He's certain of what the answer is.
Who is not behaving like a scientist at all.
Mm.
And, well, not a good scientist, in my opinion. And also culturally insensitive.
Look! I'll give him a little bit of a defense here. As Paul Stamets' lawyer, Vulcans are creepy jerks, and I hate them. And him standing there, and them just silently not saying fucking anything, and meditating, and doing all of that, I rolled my eyes and just said, "Can we fucking talk to each other?" Now, Jesus Christ!
Like, couldn't you have met? Like, he's given you this data. He said, like, the bleed Vulcan says, well, yeah, we know all of this. And he, because he gives them an expo dump after having given Burnham the expo dump.
For Vulcans have been around knowing humans for, what, 1,000 years at this point in the narrative of the universe. They've merged back together with Romulans, and you know what they still haven't? I know that they even say it. We have emotions. We suppress them. You think in all of this time they would learn some fucking manners? Because that's the thing that has always bugged me about Vulcans. They're all like, we're very respectful, blah, blah, blah. But they're always
tries to have that a bit.
She tries.
But nobody else does.
Nobody else does. Vulcans are not one of my favorite races in Star Trek. I find them creepy and I find them smug. And only certain...
Smug is a great word.
And only certain actors can pull them off.
Yes.
Such as Leonard Nimoy or Mark Leonard. Or, you know, or Tim Russ. They can make them charming, and they can make the smug quality of them almost endearing. But a lot of actors can't do that, and a lot of writers don't know how to do that either.
It's very difficult. It's very difficult.
So I was on Paul's side. I was like, you know what, guys? Do you guys know why he's here? He's traveled all the way out to Navarre. He's got this theory here, and you're not even going to give him the grace of a single word?
We will meditate now. That was, like, that's basically what.
And he had to ask them what they were doing, but he did it in a dickish way.
Yeah,
he was like, guys, do you mind not sleeping right now? And it's like, oh, they're meditating. This is how they do it. Blah, 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 blah. I roll my eyes at this shit. Like, this goes back all the way to TOS. Like,
also,
this isn't just new. This is just
bad sign. Bad sign when you rock up to a meeting and they didn't send you the agenda ahead of time.
Bad sign.
Bad sign. Bad sign.
Yeah, he's trying to connect back to the science, but he's doing it in... I think the text is saying he's being selfish here or self-driven here where he wants the answer.
So that's why I say that he's being a bad scientist, because he is trying to force the conclusion to agree with his hypothesis.
Mm-hmm.
He's not actually completing the scientific method the way that it's meant to be done.
And that could be a cool character flaw to explore in the season.
Yeah.
They won't with him. They will with Taka, though. Taka? Is that his name? Taco? Burrito? That's what Hugh ate, and he lost his soul and went down the fucking toilet. Book.
Beautiful.
Yeah, it's a beautiful storyline. I can't wait for season 5, episode 2, Burrito Soul. Book comes along with him. Could you remind me why? He says that he just wants to.
And he's been helping out with the data.
He wants to be helpful. So
yeah,
he needs
to be involved in them trying to figure out what the DMA is so that he is feeling productive, because he can't stay still at this stage in his grief journey.
What I would need from this, because He comes across as completely useless until they do the mind meld thing. That's where it's like, oh, he has a purpose.
Why not fucking start with that?
No, I understand why they don't start with that, because it's not an obvious thing to go to.
No. But what I was going to say... Like, you are going to the Vulcans. Like, they should have done that meditation before.
What I need from it to be Star Trek-y is he comes along with, even if the Vulcans are rude to him and do this, what I need of him before they get to the mind meld, instead of just standing there looking sad and whimpering in the corner like a dog, I need him to come. He's a cat person. I need him to at least do the hello there. I'm the only person who knows things about Quajon in the room. Here's what I can give you. And if he even gives them basic knowledge of what happened at the event and Quajon and all of that, it would mean that he at least semi, or at least on the face of it, serves a function as some kind of official in this meeting, rather than just a guy who is there too. Right? How many times in Star Trek have we seen that? It would have been making
Book
it...
Book loves crashing meetings that he really shouldn't be in.
And has nothing to offer other than, I'm sad because I'm the last one. Thanks, yeah, we know, but, like, we need more than that, because also it's a very one-note thing, but it's just, okay, cool. Book's just going to, like, the actor who plays Book, he gets to just stand on this set and just mope in the background for 90% of the runtime.
Far away from the other actors, because COVID.
Oh, that too. But, like, it's very noticeable, though, right? The fact that they don't have anything for the character to do except for that one thing that only happens at the end.
Yes.
When we were watching early TNG, like season one, we noticed that a lot with Deanna Troi, right? Where it's like whole scenes will be there and Deanna Troi's just sitting there doing nothing except for at the end when they're like, what do you sense, Deanna? And then she offers very little, like, oh, I sense that this is a tense situation. Yeah, thanks, Deanna. And then she leaves the scene and it just always makes it stand out as like, why are they here? What are they going to offer to this? Oh, nothing? Oh, wait, here it is, and it's very little.
Did you find anything?
There was no qualitative evidence of superluminous radiation. Tachyons were not present.
Did you feel anything with Book and how they were tying him into the overall themes and motifs?
No.
Why? Because they clearly wanting you to feel things. Why doesn't it hit?
I am tired of saying this. The show didn't do the work. They didn't make me invested in Book in general, let alone this relationship. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, oh yeah, that's a sad thing. I guess I'm kind of sad, but then it moves on. So I don't get really left feeling anything. I'm just acknowledging the emotions that are happening on screen and I have some kind of sympathetic response.
Yeah, it is not difficult. I understand the emotions. I know what they are. It's not as if I do not have those myself and are unable to see them communicated, but doesn't mean that they have actually affected me. Oh, cool. He's crying? Yeah, it doesn't mean that I'm crying, though, does it? You have to, again, put in the work more. And for us, as viewers, the work hasn't been put in. And if it has, the work that has been put in has been hollow. Is it time? I mean, we've danced around it, but it's the name of the episode. Is it time to talk about the Romulan warrior nuns, Rachel and Michael?
No.
Oh, what's before?
Well, let's dip the toe in first.
Okay, thank you. I need a little bit of a wet toe.
The president.
I noticed in our last two episodes we haven't really talked about the president as a character, because it's like, well, what is there to say? She's a character that we've met before. Her name was Admiral Cornwall. Her name was Admiral Vance, the classic character that seemingly is shady because they don't believe in Michael. But by the end of the season, we'll learn that they are actually good. And you know they're actually good because by the end, they believe in Michael.
Yeah. But her connection stuff is more about connecting the Federation back up and connecting to Nefar.
Her one is the needs of the many.
Yes.
Outweigh the needs of the few or the one.
Yep.
And Michael, being somebody raised Vulcan, can't appreciate that. Even though she just went on this magical journey where she just understood Navarre culture. Understandably, I mean, they are Romulan warrior nuns. Romulans aren't same as Vulcans. But I don't mind the president. I think it comes down to her performance more so than the writing itself. Because the writing itself is very much kiddies first politics, where they always play that sinister music and have Michael grimacing as if what the president is doing is unscrupulous and immoral, yeah. But it really isn't. And it's a part because the actress is playing it with absolute sincerity. And so the actress is playing this president not as a cold, heartless, mustache-twirling evil politician, but rather as like a fully lived-in person. So there was no real point in this journey in which I questioned her and I questioned how she tied into this theme that we're going to of connection, where her goal is an unpopular one. She has to be the one to make those calls that may make her come across as callous, but she is doing the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few or the one.
Immediate gratification isn't worth undermining long-term sustainability.
She's thinking of the long play. Rather than the short one. And that has a place and a time. And I can understand why Michael doesn't appreciate that, because not everybody does. And Michael is clearly a character that never has. It's not off-brand for Michael to hate this type of character.
No, and her bitching about politics each fucking episode is also on-brand for her.
Yes. She sends them on this mission because she wants good relationships with Navarre. Hopefully they can, and also because a Starfleet officer was killed, but it is mainly because if we tie this up, if we clean this up and we win favor with Navarre and show that we are that magical Federation, they will hopefully sign on board. The mission being, we have to get this Romulan warrior nun who has stolen dilithium and has killed a Starfleet officer. We need to track them down, and we aren't just going to do a manhunt. We are going to team up with the Romulan warrior nun sect, respect their culture and their beliefs, but that doesn't mean that you, Michael, aren't the leader of the mission. That was actually a really good scene between Michael and the president, in which Michael is assuming that, I'm just going to have to bend the knee to the Romulan, to my mum and the Romulan warrior nun's way of doing it. But the president just coldly reminding, no. We're going to be accommodating, but you're still in charge. You do it the way we need this done, okay? But she, in a way, she subtly knows Michael well enough to know that Michael, on this journey, will do the right thing.
Especially putting her mum there.
Yeah, and putting the mum there too. Were you happy to see the mum again?
No. No, she's useless. Well, in terms of a character, she's useless. As plot activation, she's very handy.
Were you happy to see the Romulan warrior nuns return?
No.
Because it opens with them.
Yep, it sure does. Sure does. I found the blocking of that scene very confusing.
I found the actor of the guy who got murdered very confusing because he was immediately like Hulk mode. Immediately, he didn't even try to be diplomatic. He's like, hey, stop there. No, he was very much, fuck you. I'm going to fucking bash your skull in. How dare you steal the dilithium? If he was an Emerald Chain member, I would understand. As a Starfleet guy, I was like, whoa, you're really aggressive. Straight off the bat.
Calm your tits.
Well, if he did calm his tits, he would have chose to live.
Yeah. And then Starfleet wouldn't have had a reason to get involved.
Yeah, you're right, you're right, you're right. Okay, let's talk about Michael and this whole...
Oh, you want to skip the mum's connections to the theme?
Well, let's tie her with Michael because they seem interlocked.
Well, no, because, like, for the mum... It's also about connection to community, which isn't a part of Michael's journey.
Mm.
Because she's reconnecting with somebody that's supported her and they're going to have to reciprocate the relationship, which they do kind of touch on with Michael in terms of Saru last episode.
Well, I was going to say Michael in this episode with her mum.
Yes.
Where she has to do the same, in which she has to... Let go of her own feelings and apply them to her mother. Same with the mother having to let go of her need to understand and trust her mentor in what's happening. Because she's going in wanting to actually know why her mentor is doing this.
Yeah.
The mum has
unconditional positive regard for her mentor, which is not something that Michael has for the president, but will kind of learn to have it, sort of. And that's, in a way, what Vance's metaphor is also kind of getting at.
Yeah, and Michael doesn't have undying trust in her mother. But by the end of this episode, she does have more trust with her mum because her mother has proven to be a slippery character in this series. Somebody who did not live up to the image she had of her as a child. And so here the mum swaggers in and she's all, I'm Kwat Malat and I'm going to be this. But she opens herself up in moments to be the mum to Michael, but also not compromising her
she's still
values.
A sister.
Yes.
But she's letting herself be more of a mother than she has in previous ones. But that's also a similar journey to what she has in that episode where she pops back up when they're trying to get the data from the Science Institute.
The Logic Tribunal.
Yeah.
Okay, look, can I just say that we can talk about the themes and how it connects to connection and all of that, and that's great. You know, Discovery has themes. You can't say it doesn't have themes. And does it connect to its themes? Yes, it does. You know how? Because they tell us that it does. And if you're worried that it's just that they tell us, don't worry, they show us that it does. That's not enough. That's not enough.
To create meaning.
It's not enough. A major factor in that is I have to not only care about the story, but the characters. There are some characters where you can give them a theme all you like, and it doesn't matter. Wesley Crusher has so many stories with so many well-plotted-out themes, doesn't mean I enjoy them. Oh, great. The writers did the bare minimum and had the character connect to an overarching theme of an episode. Wonderful.
You mean there's a point for this story?
There's a point of some reason. So we have this whole thing with Michael's mother and Michael, and they have to track down this Romulan warrior nun, and they find this planet, but it's actually a ship, and the ship is this race of people, and the nun has sworn her fealty to them, and on and on and on it goes. It's not very fun to watch. It is a story that is dehydrated. It is needing moisture. I want to drop some water on it and see it grow, but it is so shriveled. It is just dying in front of my eyes because of how undernourished this is.
Ryan.
Because there's nothing to it. You know what's going on. As soon as they see the dead alien body, you go, oh, well, she's sworn her fealty to this alien race, and that's why everything's going on. And then you have to spend time just waiting for everything to catch up with no real twists or kinks or turns in the story.
Ryan, I'm so proud of you. Because you have so much more energy left in you for the dissection of this. Because you were very clearly struggling to not just say that it was boring.
Oh, no, it's not even that this plot was boring.
No,
it's
but like
just
that
did
was on
nothing
the,
with it.
That was on the tip of your tongue. Of like, this is dull. This is boring. They don't do anything with it. And you are trying to make that interesting to listen to. And I'm like, I don't have that left in me anymore, I don't think.
It's not like, even, yeah, it's not that I'm trying to make it more interesting. It's more that I'm trying to grapple
you
with
why
this is a failure to me.
You are trying to unpack it.
Because
rather than, you know, the part of the point of the podcast and the discussion is to delve into what is wrong or what is good about this show.
Mm-hmm.
And it is more complicated than it's plain.
Because I want to, when I review these and look at these, for myself, as well as for who's listening, dismiss the idea that the story itself is useless and has nothing to it. Because I always think if they had this idea and did it in Voyager, Deep Space Nine, TOS, Enterprise, the animated series, wherever else, how it would work or not work. But I want to dismiss that notion that this Romulan warrior story where this fealty to this alien race that's on this ship, that's a story. That is a story. And it's not an inherently boring
one. That
could
be good.
And it's not inherently, on its face value, boring. Because there are those, say, for instance, TNG episodes where when they even present it to you, you go, oh, that sounds fucking boring. And there's no way you're going to twist that into something interesting. Here, you could have... Strange New Worlds does this all the time, by the way. To give praise to a modern Star Trek show. Strange New Worlds could take this and make something out of it. But here, they leave it withering and to die. And I don't know why. Why does this series, in particular, not nourish, not fertilize, not fulfill its stories? Why doesn't it do that? How does it not do that, Rachel?
I don't know, but it's very good at it. Has a black thumb for stories.
I do love how you see everyone on this ship rising to the occasion. A big part of this show is the discovery of who we are and who we are to each other and what our roles really are. And you see that with this DMA. You see everyone rising. You see everyone cementing more and more into who they're destined to be because of the hardship of it all.
I just ripping my hair out at this because I could watch a whole episode of this. I hate the Romulan warrior nuns, but I could watch a whole episode of them teaming up with these ragtag weirdos. We learn something about them. They learn something from our crew. We have some weird...
It means something when that one
nun dies, yeah. And we have a new locale to visit. We have a little bit of a creepy atmosphere. We misinterpret what this nun is doing and yada, yada, yada. And in essence, that's there, but it is only an essence of it. Only a fog, only a blur of this. It's not real. And so, like, I feel like we're obliged to talk about it, but I don't actually have anything to say. Like, yeah, they go there and They have a pointless little fight scene, and the nun has a sword, and they go up an elevator, and they activate it, and there's this beautiful moment in which they see this alien species flying around, and Tilly and Michael embrace each other and say, like, this is what we're here for. And that's when the episode should have ended, by the way. That's when you cut to credits right there.
Absolutely.
But no, we got to have more. We got to wrap everything. We got to tend to the other things on the checklist.
When you try and do everything, you do nothing well. The Discovery creators do not understand that phrase. They don't. Or they think that they're the exception. Because they just keep on throwing more at you. And they're trying to have it every way. And it ends up being pulled in every which direction, which leaves it strained.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think it pleased anybody. This is the season where they have been pulled in the most directions, and this is the lowest rated season overall.
A visual I have in my brain is somebody saying, when you're going on a hike, hey, Rachel, which direction should we go? And you go, and you take a step forward, and then a step back, and then a step back, and then a step forward, and then a step to the left, and then a step to the right, and then...
We're going for a hike, not playing hopscotch.
You've technically moved, but you aren't moving anywhere. You're moving in all directions, but none. You're not making any steps forward. You're not making a choice. Choose to live. No, choose to tell a story. Choose to actually spend the 55 minutes of this actually going into something instead of just taking step back, step forward, step back, step forward, step left, step right, step right, step left. That's it. That's it. I'm sick of talking about this. There's nothing
Huda
else.
Huda time!
Huda. Hugh Colbert is a character that we look into.
We officially are told that he is ship's counselor.
And medical officer.
And a medical officer. He has double duty.
How does it feel? How does it feel?
I feel a bit vindicated, to be honest, because we have said that quite a lot. It's just like, yeah, now it makes more sense that he's having these conversations and that people are going to him. And you know what? Maybe it was part of his counselor training that it's so ingrained in him to just smile and nod.
Why didn't they make him this from the beginning?
I don't know. I don't know why.
I know why. So in...
Well, they also... They thought he was going to be dead.
Yeah, that's a great point. But no. I know why. Okay, say we look at it and go, okay, in the grand scheme of the show, why didn't they make him the counselor to begin with? The reason why is because there's only been one counselor character in the ensemble of casts, and that is Deanna Troi.
He's not an empath?
No. It is not a recurring staple of the ensemble in Star Trek. So
True. They
don't need to fill that in. What you need to fill in, okay, if you were the head
you
of...
You need a medical officer
if you were the
more than
head
you need a counselor
of, yeah.
in the ensemble, according
exactly.
to, like, you know, the expectations and the blueprints that are set out by the other series.
If I was given Star Trek and I was told to create a show, one of the first things I would think about is, what characters would I want and what roles will they need? Okay, I need a captain, a first officer, I need an engineer, I need a chief of security, I need a doctor. Just bam, 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 bam.
The command staff. You would absolutely fill out the command staff.
And guess
first.
Who's not? And guess who's not there? A counselor.
What Hugh isn't? Head of medical.
No. But that was a part of their. See, we're not like old Star Trek, but we kind of are. Because although Hugh and Paul are not chief engineer and chief medical officer, in the purpose of the narrative, they are. For what
they
we get...
They serve the same function, but without the title.
Without the title. Paul is the guy we cut to in engineering who speaks engineering babbly. Oh, but it's through science-y mushroom shit. Yeah, either way, it doesn't matter. We always cut to him and go, hey, Paul, can you turn the ship on? Yes, we can. Hey, Stamets, hey, Hugh.
We need power for this. We need power for that.
Hey, Hugh, heal Paul's broken nose because you're the doctor. It was an expectation. That's what made Deanna Troi an interesting thing in concept is having a counselor was actually a smart idea. That was actually really, like, really clever. That wasn't something you would expect, but it actually would make a lot of sense and would actually be cool. And I actually wish that other Star Trek shows were willing to have a counselor character. That's actually why I appreciate that they made made Hugh the counselor here, finally. Because the actor is better at playing that. It's kind of like how Guinan would have been a better counselor than Deanna Troi, because Whoopi Goldberg just has that warmth and energy in their performance, while Marina Sirtis was always kind of weirdly cold and obviously alien, and didn't feel like there would be a counselor you would want. Like, would you want Deanna Troi as your counselor?
No, but would you I need to talk to somebody.
She's the only one there. And she's not doing anything else other than being sexually assaulted or eating fudge. So we've got to let her do some work on the ship. But Hugh, you'd want him to be your counselor. He seems like a nice guy, and he seems like he listens and cares.
Yeah.
That's all I have to say about Hugh, because most of the time he's just smiling and nodding and giving positive affirmations. You are the best, and I'm so glad to see you, Gray. It's finally great to see you, and we hug, and it's really tender.
And I'm gonna watch Adira aggressively play like hollow darts.
There was a conversation with Saru, in which Saru had that alien phrase you loved so much about riding that thing, but you only have one set of buttocks. You were really upset with that line.
I was just like, what the fuck? Like,
is that the yum yum moment? Let's be real.
Oh boy,
it probably is.
Yeah. I am not enjoying the repeated versions of these not jokes that have been in the first couple of episodes so far. I had forgotten about them. But the, my culture's different jokes. Mm-hmm. And the last couple have been Tilly using references to Earth and then explaining them. This one was slightly better because they didn't over-explain it.
You're right.
But it was still weird.
There is a difference between a humorous tone and humor. And that is what this is.
Yeah.
There's a humorous tone. There's no real humor, though. All right. What do you rate this? Yum being bad or yum yum being good? That's our system of rating. There is no half yums. We're not allowed to give a, I actually feel like this is kind of good, but I want to say yum 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 ye. No. Rachel, yum or yum yum?
Yum yum.
Yum yum.
Yum yum.
No, I'm kidding. It's a yum.
Yum.
I literally bugged my eyes out at that. I was like, what? After all this shit talking you do, you're gonna give this one a yum yum? There's been better episodes you've given a yum to. What? This is the best episode to me thus far in the season that we've watched. Even though I think it was structurally the most messy, I had moments where I cared a little, which is more than I can say previously. Is it earned? No. Is it because I'm a man dying of thirst in the desert? Yes. But that is the experience.
A drowning man just needs one breath.
But the context, which is for
is
kings.
Is this the breath of yum yum for you?
Yeah. It's my, a single breath helps a drowning man. Yeah, but that's my context, which we all know is for kings. I still give this a yum.
Yum.
It's just not good enough. It's not even, like, to me, still, this isn't as bad as season 3. Still, this isn't as bad as season 3.
No, but it's still bad.
It's just not good enough. Like, you can say bad. I'm just like, this is pathetic, pitiful, and not good enough.
We deserve better.
We do deserve better. What are we going to be talking about next time on Star Trek Discovery?
You know what? I have a feeling it's going to be, you know, episode 4
mm-hmm.
of season 4.
It's, you could correct me, but I do believe this is the lowest rated episode of the entire show.
4.9
mm-hmm.
is the average.
Couldn't even crack it up to a 5.
Nope. And that's, let's see how many ratings. Still not even cracking 3,000 ratings on IMDb.
That's still a good amount.
It's only, it's 2.3.
That's not bad, but lowest rated episode of the series thus far.
Anyway, all is possible.
Not a good rating. That's not possible for this one, apparently.
Tilly and Adira lead a team of Starfleet Academy cadets on a training mission that takes a dangerous turn. Meanwhile, Burnham is pulled into tense negotiations on Navarre.
I will not give too much away, but I remembered this one being very frustrating for the regarding issue that I have, in which there was a plot you could have done and it does not really do it. Right, that's it. You can find us on the social medias of Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, Tumblr, blah, blah, blah. All of them under Yum Yum Pod or Yum Yum Podcast. We are posting there regularly, talking about all numerous amounts of things, going through discussion points of things we've talked about here and of episodes of Babylon 5.
Mm-hmm.
As you know, we talk about Babylon 5 as well. It's a great yin and yang of sci-fi. Star Trek Discovery and Babylon 5. Really on the opposite ends of the spectrum. But we go through them, and if you aren't aware that we talk about B5, check that out. We have an email if you want to contact us directly. What is the email, Rachel?
yumyumpod@gmail.com. But for your convenience, all of that is linked in the description. As is
our Patreon. Our Patreon, in which we give a bountiful load of bonus content, ranging from discussions of movies such as the Star Trek movies and the X-Men movies. We talked about every single episode of Strange New Worlds and every single episode of Season 2 of Star Trek Picard when they were coming out. So if you want to hear our fresh, hot takes off the presses of those, go over to the Patreon and you can support us there. There's numerous amounts of tiers, all of these amazing perks, such as being a member of our group Discord. You get to be a part of the community, talk to us, have some fun, share some things. It's a great time. If you have the means to do so, or you are at all inclined, head over to Yum Yum Podcast on Patreon. But that is all we've got for you. That's it. If Narn was here in this, Narn would not have tolerated these warrior nuns. She would have punched them, she would have kicked them, and she would have said, please, please choose to yum yum.